The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The hands of Spironi, the rage of Sarri and the cross of Nkudu. Liverpool remain 4 points clear at the top of the Premier League after a slightly fortunate win over Crystal Palace, while City keep on the pressure with victory in Huddersfield. Elsewhere, Leicester fans finally get what they want, an exciting game, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer breaks records with Manchester United. In the Football League, evil spying Leeds get what they deserve at Stoke, a Charlton player gets one in the what-sits from a fan, and a last-minute winner for Cambridge as the Colin Calderwood revolution gathers pace. We'll talk to Sid in Spain, round up the rest of Europe, take your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. My thanks to Carruthers and Rudd, which sounds like a sort of a suburban accountancy firm, doesn't it, for sitting in for me. Way too professional, so I will bring this back down to the level it deserves to be in the company of Barry Glenn Denning. Hello, Baz.
Good morning.
Did you miss me?
Like a turkey misses Christmas, Max.
Thanks. Dom Fifield, hello.
Good morning, how are you doing?
I was good. I'm good. You were late today because somebody refused to unblock a door in Norwood.
That's a common situation in
Did
Norwood.
They know you were on, you know, Sunday supplements, Dom Fifield is on this train, I must get on it.
I think they were trying to get off.
Really? Well, it's nice to see you, and it's nice to see you, Ed Ahrens. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Is this your first pod of the season?
It certainly is, yeah.
Okay, have you been, what have you been doing, just thrashing it out in the reserves, trying to impress the gaffer?
Just beavering away and hoping I'll catch his eye, really. And now I have, hopefully.
Well, it's a big opportunity. Will it be like Fernando Llorente?
Well, hopefully it'll be slightly better than that, you know.
We'll find out.
We'll see.
Let's start with Arsenal-Chelsea. Arsenal 2, Chelsea 0. Dom, you were there. And this is the big story out of this is the sort of meltdown of Maurizio Sarri and why he's continuing with Sarri ball and refuses to change. How did you find the game?
Well, the game was one-sided in the first half. Arsenal swarming all over a very poor Chelsea team. They looked disorganised. They did what they have done on occasion of late and looked as if they just weren't at the races. Second half, when Chelsea had a bit more urgency about them, that they lack a cutting edge. So the result in itself was quite predictable on that basis. But yeah, you're right, the meltdown afterwards was the interesting thing. He's not, Maurizio Sarri's not reverted back to Italian since taking up the reins at Chelsea in the summer. But he wanted to get his message across. He wanted to be critical of his players, and that in itself is quite a bold move, and one that previous Chelsea managers have attempted and invariably lost.
I'm extremely angry. This is not me, this is him. I'm extremely angry, very angry indeed. This defeat was due to our mentality. It appears this group of players are extremely difficult to motivate. This is not a team that is going to be well known for its battling qualities. That's going to inspire them, Ed, isn't it?
Well, not exactly, no. I mean, he's been heading towards this for a few weeks, though. I think Dom would agree. I went to the game last week against Newcastle, and he didn't hide away from sort of criticising the club in general, that, you know, they hadn't given him what he wanted and saying that the squad isn't good enough. And really, it kind of feels like the beginning of the end potentially for him already with saying something like that at Chelsea, where, you know, the board is king, really, and you have to do what they say. Otherwise, you don't last very long. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks to see how he, you know, if he does get their reaction first of all, and whether, you know, what kind of view the board take of those kind of comments.
It's a question from Darren. Why won't Sarri change? Increase the tempo. Play Giroud. He's quite good. Move Hazard wide, where he's world class. It bores Darren. What does it do to you, Barry?
I wouldn't say it bores me, but I can certainly see Darren's point. But I think when you employ Maurizio Sarri, you know what you're getting. He has his fixed way of playing and isn't prepared to change. I was as surprised as anyone by his comments after the game. And it could be argued it's his job to motivate these players who are difficult to motivate. You could argue that he could change things around because Chelsea were constantly sort of getting balls into the box or getting promising positions, and there was no one in the penalty area. But I think he's never slow about digging out his players publicly, either individually or collectively, not to that extent. But I think if you're a grown adult and you get dug out by your boss in any walk of life, you can should be able to take it if it's fair, the criticism. And I think that criticism was fair because they clearly weren't at the races on Saturday. Footballers and their agents are sort of a different beast, though, to a lot of people in other walks of life. And this Chelsea dressing room has in the past proved that if they decide they want a manager gone, then go is what he shall do. Sarri probably knows that, probably isn't that fussed, to be honest. And but it will be interesting to see how they react.
But why won't he change? I mean, I get the idea, you know, Sarri's been successful playing this style, but then everybody knows what he's going to play, and you know, teams can work out how to play it, Dom. It doesn't seem to make any sense.
I don't think we can judge Sarri in terms of Chelsea yet, because he hasn't got players who are capable of doing what he wants them to do at the moment. I mean, yeah, you can
but then
argue,
but then
you change
it,
like Conte did last 2 years ago after being humiliated at Arsenal. But he was brought in, Sarri was brought in specifically to play Sarri ball. That's why they went for him. That's he hasn't been successful at any point in his career doing anything else. It's always just been this style. So he isn't a manager that is going to be flexible. He's stuck in his ways. And he, I mean, he was allowed to bring in Jorginho to play the style. And that was his main summer signing, aside from the goalkeeper, I guess. And he was the player that they were going to build it around. But he's a player that's adapting to English football and it isn't the sort of dynamic midfielder that is going to dominate a Premier League match. But you also have to look at the scenario of Chelsea as well. There's a it's a muddled situation behind the scenes in terms of recruitment at the moment. There's still no head of no sporting director. Marina Granovskaya is still doing all that work. But there are also a lot of players that you could argue are unsettled. David Luiz, out of contract in the summer, probably going to leave, very likely to leave. Eden Hazard's got one eye on it, Real Madrid, we all know. Willian, Pedro, both out of contract in 2020, same year as Hazard. Callum Hudson-Odoi, you know, the bright young thing from the academy, is probably going to leave this month for Bayern Munich. The club captain, Gary Cahill's completely frozen out. Victor Moses, a Premier League winner, frozen out. There's a lot of flux there and a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, when he questions players' motivation, that might be a reason. You know, these why should these players be particularly motivated? Why should they be suddenly, you know, tearing into this match? Maybe their futures are all lying elsewhere.
So what does that mean? Does that mean, Ed, that next season Sarri will be there and it'll be a totally different squad or what?
Well, the way I see it at the moment is it looks like he doesn't have that much longer left if he can't. You know, if he can't work with what he's got there and within the system that Chelsea want him to, then it's very difficult to see how he's going to build anything long term there. I mean, I think that they obviously would like him to do that because they don't want to be changing the manager every season, although it has worked for them in the past. But it's difficult to see how it balances up now. It does seem very muddled thinking at the moment across the board, really.
Mm. I mean, I guess, Baz, you sort of feel that Chelsea fans probably don't mind because they change their manager all the time and they just win stuff and then they lose stuff and then they win stuff again.
That's certainly one way of looking at it. I would be surprised if... I mean, Ed, are you saying that if they don't finish in the top four, he would go end of this season?
I would have thought so, yeah, because it would be another season outside the Champions League just wouldn't be, you know, palatable for Chelsea. And, I mean, obviously you need a bit of time as manager to have an effect on a team, but it started off so well, but it's unravelling so quickly now that you kind of see it's very difficult for him to get back from this.
Yeah,
bring back Jose.
Oh God, no, that won't happen. I would be surprised personally if, even by Chelsea standards, I think it would be extremely premature to give him just one season. When he, I would imagine at his interview, he set out, this is what I want, these are the players I want. He hasn't had time to implement what is a fairly comprehensive overhaul.
It would take a proper breakdown of his relationship with Granovskaya in particular for him to go in the summer, I think. Mm. I mean, we have to bear in mind that they're fourth. They're 3 points clear of fifth. I mean, that actually, at the start of the season, if you told Chelsea supporters that, you know, going towards the end of January that they were 3 points clear in the Champions League places, they probably have accepted it. The problem he's had is that he had such a brilliant start and it's tailed off. I mean, he actually anticipated them having a slow start and then picking up. It's quite interesting. On Friday, he still insists that they're going to be stronger in the second half of the season because they will have more of an idea of what he wants come the second half. But I can't see that at the moment. But they do seem to be a team that's running out of steam.
And the thing is, they're fourth. They will, given Tottenham's current injury woes, I'd be fairly confident they will overtake Tottenham, and Liverpool and Manchester City are.
Do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Not so sure.
If Higuain hits the ground running there and scores goals for them, then that's a massive boost, and that would give them an edge.
So, well, that's Sarri's pinning everything on Higuain, isn't he? Basically coming in and being the missing piece of the jigsaw, and to finish off some of the chances that they've been creating all season. Obviously, Morata has been a massive flop, and so Sarri's pinning everything on that. I think he's a great manager, and I think he could have a really, really good effect on Chelsea, and needs to be given the time. But I just think the beginning of these disagreements publicly as well, Chelsea I don't think they view them very favourably. And I mean, it depends how far he takes it, doesn't it? If he kind of carries on and gets them into the top four and finishes off the season well, then yes, I think he would stay. But if it kind of starts to unravel like it did with Conte, then
he's very different character to Conte, though. He's not, Conte was, he called it on a war with the board as well as the players at times. Sarri seems to be somebody that will accept what's given to him from above, in terms of the transfers and stuff, and we'll just get on with it. And he's sort of setting himself these targets to improve the players that he's got. You know, he's arguably failing in some regards on that front, but he's not the same abrasive character that Conte was. Conte would, I mean, that this time last year, Conte was a dead man walking because there was no way that relationship was ever going to heal. Whereas, Sarri, I don't think we've got to that stage yet.
And we should mention Arsenal because they also played in this game. Both teams had 13 shots. Arsenal had 5 on target. Chelsea only had 1. Lacazette was a lovely finish. Very pleased for Koscielny. He looked delighted to score with his shoulder. And that Aubameyang overhead kick. It's such a shame it didn't go in, Don, because it was, with his wrong foot, technically so difficult to do. They did what they had to do. They played well, didn't they?
They did play well. And a note also for Aaron Ramsey, who was playing on the tip of the diamond, which seemed to confuse Chelsea in itself, that switch in tweaking formation. Ramsey was excellent. The front two were fantastic. That whole midfield, actually, unit of Arsenal were all over Chelsea in the first half in particular. And I know Arsenal can do this, particularly at home, but it was an impressive performance, and it was one that was much needed after a particularly difficult week for them.
Parental advisory, Barney Ronno writing that Guendouzi is an arsehole, and they've had lots of dickheads, but they haven't had any arseholes, and it's important to have one. Apologies for the language. Barry, you were about to say something?
Well, watching the game, I didn't think Arsenal were that impressive. I appreciate you can only beat what is in front of you, and what was in front of them on the day was not up to much, but I thought it wasn't that impressive in a performance by Arsenal. But maybe I'm just
a
too hard to
bastard.
Please, because you know, Dominic thinks they play very well, everyone else I've heard talk about them thinks they played very well. I thought They were decent. I think they played considerably better than they often do, but you know, the bar is quite low where Arsenal is concerned. But again, maybe I'm just being too hard.
Crystal Palace played well, didn't they? They lost 4-3 at Liverpool. Excellent game. Do you think Palace were unlucky?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, Liverpool were very good as well, and obviously the big talking point was poor old Julian Speroni's mistake to let Liverpool go back into the lead. But, yeah, I mean, Palace can be very proud of themselves for scoring 3 goals at Anfield. I think it's only 3 goals conceded in the whole season at Anfield, and then to do, you know, 3 in the same afternoon was quite a good effort from a team that struggles to score goals. Yeah, it was a shame they couldn't get any points, though, because, you know, that's quite important in the Premier League.
Yeah, it sort of matters for football matches, yeah, doesn't it?
I do think to score 3 goals at Anfield and not get anything is unforgivable. It really is.
But Liverpool, I mean, you know, you don't want to sort of go, well, it looks like the title's theirs, because, I mean, the first 3 goals were all lucky, weren't they? You know, that Van Dijk shot took a huge Ricochet.
Fourth goal is quite lucky as well, if you bear in mind the handball.
Yeah, the handball with the fourth. So all four goals.
Bear in mind, you've got a very biased panel here. Half of your panel is Palace fans.
That's true. But no, I mean, I don't mind either way. And I thought, you know, Liverpool's goals were lucky. Firmino's was deflected. That Spironi mistake, Barry. I mean, it's very hard to tell what he was trying to do. He hadn't played for 2 years, but you presume he's trained in that time. I mean, I don't know if it's 2 years, but he hadn't played for a long time, right?
Yeah, and he looked like a player who hadn't played for a long time. He was indecisive. I mean, I wonder how he feels, actually, because he's made this awful rick. He's a very experienced guy. He knows he's made this awful rick. I'm not sure what he was trying to do. I think he was trying to control the ball with his hand and catch it then. But the levels to which he's now being patronised, going, oh, poor Julian, you know, he's such a nice guy and he hadn't played for so long. I would imagine that is making him feel worse than the actual, any, you know, I think he'd rather if people just went out, oh, you absolute pillock, what the hell were you doing? Because he's much loved by Crystal Palace fans, Spironi. You know, Kevin Day, comedian and Crystal Palace fan, tweeted after the game, let's not have any criticism of Spironi. He could let a goal in because he was feeding a mouse in his glove, and I still wouldn't mind.
Are your Palace fans, would either of you like to hammer him?
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, I'm sure Don was there as well, but we're all Palace fans who you know, when we're looking back at Spironi's career, remember his debut against Everton in 2004 when he tried to dribble the ball out of his penalty area and was dispossessed. And Thomas Gravesen lobbed the ball back into the net. And then at that point, I tweeted this the other day, we thought we'd never see this joker again. This guy with long hair who'd just come from Dundee, and he spent 6 months or more on the bench and behind Corrali, who had, you know, with his
tracksuit trousers
and all of that. And then Spironi built up his career and is still at Palace 15 years later. So I think that's what we'll remember about his career rather than this mistake, which was very unfortunate, and I'm sure he's having absolute nightmares about it. But, you know, he's had an amazing, amazing career and will always be a Palace legend.
Do we know, Dom, if Mo Salah's okay after being scythed down in the box? Chris Sutton said every time he dives, he risks costing Liverpool the Premier League title.
Well, he might also win them the odd penalty. I'm sort of a bit torn on this one because, I mean, that was a dive. But he's also demonstrating a sort of streetwise attitude, which will probably get Liverpool over the line at the end of the day. Every player, every successful team will have a player, I think, who will push margins right to the edge. And he's there, man, at the moment. There have been a couple of incidents recently. Saturday was just the latest. Saturday was possibly the one where he was called up most by opposing players because they remembered what happened at Selhurst Park in August, second game of the season, when he went down pretty easily as well, albeit with slightly more contact from Saka on that occasion. But I think, yes, he will get called on it now. He'll have a reputation now. But, you know, no referee's actually booked him for it yet, I don't think.
No, but they should have done. Shouldn't they? I mean,
didn't book Jamie Vardy the previous week when he dived against who was it? Who they were playing last week? Southampton, and I think he. And in fairness, the Southampton player Valerie in that game was actually sent off ultimately for two bookable offences. He also dived and wasn't booked in that game. So it seems to be referees are sort of slightly wary of it.
There was one yesterday, wasn't there? Danny Rose got
got scythed down,
which was just ridiculous. And the look on his face afterwards, and then he got fouled again by, was it Christie? I think, yeah. Wasn't it? And he was like, "That's a foul." You
know, we are obliged, obviously, by law, to, before hordes of angry Liverpool fans get in touch, to point out that players from other teams also dive.
I've never seen it.
Oh, have you not?
No. It's just a Liverpool problem, yeah. As far as
there's
I'm concerned.
There's an awful lot of whataboutery going on.
And also on the subject of players who we hope are okay, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, obviously, who was, you know, brutally forearmed in the face in the in the Chelsea game. We really, you know, our thoughts and prayers with you.
I was quite surprised by the commentary on that. Some player that he's going to get an FA ban, Marcus Alonso.
Ridiculous.
Possibly, but I didn't have thought so.
Huddersfield 0-3. Manchester City scored their 100th goal of the season. Did they already? That's quite extraordinary, isn't it? It was a pretty regulation win. The most fun part of that game, Barry, was the Man City fan asked by, was it a Sky reporter, whether he was becoming the new manager of Huddersfield Town? Martin Warhurst was in the crowd. The camera zoomed in on him in the belief that he was Jan Siewert, who may become Huddersfield's new manager. And he said, asked if he was going to become the new German, the new Huddersfield manager, he said, "I'm Martin from Wakefield."
And is he becoming the new Huddersfield manager?
He isn't. Siewert might, coach of Dortmund's second team, the same place that Huddersfield picked out David Wagner from. Rumours that a €300,000 compensation package has been agreed. I suppose if it worked the first time, why not try it again? Or is that like getting a girlfriend who's exactly like your previous girlfriend?
Pretty much, yeah. It's quite a risky strategy. But, you know, obviously at Dortmund, they are schooled in quite attacking football. And so hopefully it'll pay off for them. But it's a big job to save them this season now.
Mm. Are you saying Huddersfield should have gone for an angry rebound shag with Big Sam?
Absolutely right, yeah. That is a
think on that, everyone. Think on that. Next time you're having happy fun time with your significant other, think on that.
Man City play Burton on Wednesday night. They are 9-0 up on aggregate. Wouldn't it be the best thing in football ever if Burton got through to the final of the Carabao Cup? Don't forget the box on Thursday. Wolves 4, Leicester 3. Ben says, Max, has your theory about early kickoffs been blown out of the water? I have been labouring the point that all early kickoffs are terrible, and then this game happened. Scott Murray's Minute by Minute called it the best game in the Premier League so far this season. Do you agree, Dom?
It's probably surpassed by Liverpool Palace later in the day, wasn't it?
Not even the best game of the day.
It was a great game. It was an absolutely fantastic game. And an unlikely hat-trick from Jota as well, from nowhere. Wolves are a funny team as well. Actually, not as funny as Leicester City, come to think of it. Leicester City over Christmas go and beat Chelsea and Manchester City and then lose to everybody else, including Newport County. Mm. Bizarre. And you do wonder whether that the image of Claude Puel with his hiding his face under his hands at the end there, burying his face in there, was the overriding image of his tenure, because he may well now be looking for a new job.
He may.
But Leicester's fans wanted entertainment. They got it on Saturday.
They did. but you see, Claude Puel, the criticism of him is he's boring, right? He never shows any emotion. So perhaps they'll be excited to see how he was absolutely raging at
the
end.
Very eloquent on Canal Plus last night. Far more eloquent than he ever is in a Leicester City press conference. And suggested then that the club was still struggling with expectations post-championship winning season, which is probably accurate, but it's probably not what Leicester City fans want to hear.
Mm. He's done quite a good job bringing some younger players through, but I think the mix isn't quite there at the moment with Leicester, is it? They haven't got the experience that they need to build on this, on a reasonable start to the season. And they're in contention to come, you know, seventh, which is kind of the height of the ambitions now. But I think they really need to have some kind of different voice there. I think the players don't seem to be responding to him at all, even though they did get a response a bit in the game against Wolves, but it was kind of too late by then.
Yeah, it was quite interesting in that game actually, because Wolves sort of beat them by employing the identical tactics to the ones with which Leicester won the league, you know, get the ball in behind. And but I've said before on the pod, well, he's probably a very nice guy. He may well not be a very good manager, but his lack of charisma, I think, does him no favours whatsoever. Just, I was in a huddle with him for the Monday papers after Crystal Palace Leicester at Sellers Park, and he just, listening to him speak is soul destroying. You know, and if he has the same effect on the players, he's just this awful lack of charisma.
People put it down to his lack of English, but I went to a Nice press conference with him a few years back to talk about Wenger, and he conducted exactly the same in French with the pack over there. It was sort of mumble, didn't really want to be there.
That's just French, isn't it?
I was going to say, do you speak French, Dom, or not?
I do speak French.
Okay, yeah. Right, I was going to say. Otherwise, just the sound of someone, even if you don't understand their language. Was your huddle like a motivational huddle? Were you sort of arms around the shoulders with Claude in the middle?
No.
Okay, and a cameraman sitting up like that. Yeah.
This does not slip.
We should point out, you know, Ruben Neves is a lovely footballer, and his distribution, especially to Jota, was great, wasn't it? But I'm watching Johnny Evans and Wes Morgan defending completely different lines, and I'm sort of thinking, if that was my Saturday team, I'd be livid with them. That one of them's stepping up and one of them isn't, and neither of them are that quick. I just don't know.
But the thing is, like, Danny Simpson had a terrible game as well, and even Chilwell wasn't. He made a couple of key errors, so, you know, the entire Leicester back four was all over the place.
Manchester United 2, Brighton 1. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the best manager in the world. Marcus Rashford, the best striker in the Premier League. They're fun, aren't they, Ed?
They are fun. And although Brighton almost came back, didn't they, and spoiled the party a little bit. But I think United fans, it's good relief for them after not a very nice few months under Mourinho. 7 games in a row under Solskjaer. And really, I see United as almost... You can never say dead certs, but it just looks like they're going to get in the Champions League at this stage. The way they're going, it looks like them and Chelsea and Arsenal probably for one spot, maybe Tottenham involved in that as well. But I think United looking really good for top four.
They're like an alcoholic that's gone back on the drink. You've seen recovery, just really boring. And now they're back on the booze. They're great fun again.
So you're saying it's not going to last, Barry? Or it's not going to end well?
Well, probably not. No, I mean, all the talk is whether Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will get the job permanently or not. The consensus seems to be that he won't. And I think on the evidence of what we've seen, I think it would be mad not to give him the job because, you know, fans are enjoying the football, players are enjoying the football, the results are good. Why would you get rid of him?
First United manager to win their first 6 league games in a row. Their next 3 games are Burnley at home, Leicester and Fulham away. Well, it could be 9. I mean, it's believable, but it's sort of fanciful when I remember I was on air the day that Jose got fired and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's name was not mentioned by anyone at all.
It's been shown up to be an excellent appointment as a caretaker. I still think that we probably need to hold fire a bit in terms of long-term appointments. Just, I mean, they did brilliantly well at Wembley against Spurs, and that was a fantastic result. But, you know, let's see when they are tested. Let's see when they play a Liverpool or a Manchester City, how they fare in those matches, and whether, you know, the tactical tweaks that he, in fairness, he did make against Spurs, which paid off, you know, whether he can come up with a plan to either blunt or beat those two teams. He's done everything you could ask of him so far.
I think Rashford is possibly the main thing. Rashford was a player with no confidence under Mourinho. He's clearly a confidence player. Solskjaer has come in, and the way he's playing under Solskjaer, it's like a different person, and he's banging in goals, you know, goal a game. And if you're a football club and you have a striker who is prolific, and I appreciate it's early days yet, I mean, that he could generate millions. So, you know, I just don't understand why you would want to change that. But again, it is early. But
you'd expect Rashford to learn from a Solskjaer, yeah, wouldn't you? I mean, it has worked. He's done a lot of one-on-ones with him, apparently, and this, and worked on the on the finishing aspects of the game, and it's paying off. Yeah,
he's told, you know, insights other people wouldn't think of, like aim for the bit of the goal that the keeper can't reach, that kind of thing.
Jose was on BN Sport saying, you know, his hands were tied in the transfer market, moaning about Klopp and Guardiola being backed. If you're a manager and you have your hands, you have in your hands the possibility to choose the players you want to follow your football idea. That is one thing. Another thing, if you're not able to do this, part of the great pleasure of Solskjaer doing so well is how bad it makes Jose look. Is that unfair of me?
I just thought it was brilliant when he admitted that the UEFA basket routine.
Yeah, yeah. For the very few people that don't know the story, tell the story.
Well, he was banned. I wasn't actually covering Chelsea at the time, but he was banned by UEFA for a game. I can't remember. Was it Bayern Munich you're playing?
It was Bayern Munich, Munich.
And he was banned from the dressing room prior to kickoff and at halftime. And he snuck in a
laundry basket.
Laundry basket, that's right.
Isn't that like Toad from The Wind in the Willows? Didn't he sneak out of something in a laundry basket?
Oh, wasn't he in prison?
That was Murdoch from the 18. Was a bit smuggled out.
I'd imagine it's a recurring plot line. Did Richard Keys or Andy Gray remove their tongues from his colon for long enough to pull him up on these spurious remarks about...
It's a great question, and it's not a TV show that I watch, Barry, so I don't know the answer to. But, you know, if you did watch it... I know Rich is a big fan of... You've had a Twitter spat with him, haven't you?
Well, he had one with me. I didn't dignify it with a response.
What did he say you were?
Pardon?
He said something that you just were totally non-entertaining.
I was unentertaining and unfunny.
Yeah.
And
well, he gets something right.
And so were you. I think you got dragged into it.
I did.
I can't even remember what it was about.
Well, who knows? Anyway, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll start with Fulham against Spurs.
In today's non-stop world, making quality time for yourself is more important than ever. When you buy a subscription to The Guardian and The Observer, you can look forward to sitting back and leafing through every page at your own pace. From the latest groundbreaking investigations to recipes, reviews, award-winning sports coverage and more. Subscribe before the 3rd of February and you'll save up to 52% on newspaper subscriptions for a year. Just search Guardian subscriptions.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. If you are coming to our live shows in Dublin tonight or tomorrow, we'll look forward to seeing you. Barry, I'm pretty jet lagged, so could you do the heavy lifting on the shows?
Okay.
Thanks. Fulham 1, Spurs 2. Harry Winks. Great opportunity for Harry-based chat in the headlines today, given that Harry Winks and not Harry Kane was the saviour for Tottenham. What did you make of their performance, Dom?
Huff and puff. Difficult first half. Obviously, Llorente doing what he's paid to do, scoring goals. Wrong end, never mind. But deserved second half. Fulham are making basic errors and a team of Spurs' quality, even without Kane and a hamstrung Dele Alli by the end, was going to capitalise on that. And they did it just in the nick of time. But it's sort of a bit of a tonic for them. But look, their injury list is mounting all the time, and that will hamper them going forward. But Fulham, that just felt like a nail in the coffin, really, to be honest. The untimely nature of the concession.
I mean, a point wouldn't...
Probably been a brilliant result, actually. You know, come on. I mean, not in terms of...
It would have been a brilliant result in terms of the league table.
It would have given them something to build on psychologically. It would have been so significant to have got that against an elite team. But as it transpires, it almost felt worse, the nature of conceding so late.
And actually slightly frustrating, because a few weeks ago, the bottom of the table looked really quite interesting, and one of sort of, you know, three of seven could have gone down. But now Huddersfield and Fulham look so adrift, don't they, Ed?
Mm, they do. It's a long way back for them, but they have so many good players in their squad. I mean, we saw Ryan Barbel made his debut for them and had a great first half, especially. And they have the goals in the team to stay up, and there's such a long way to go that it is still possible. But, you know, the gap is massive now, and they really need to start winning straight away. And obviously, the defence is the real problem. I think Dennis Adoy an interview I heard with him on the radio before the game, saying that you shouldn't just blame the back four for conceding all these goals. But yesterday, I think they were really, really culpable for both of those goals.
Yeah, on British TV, Graham Souness, I mean, hammering the defence at the end for not stopping the cross and not, you know, nobody following on Harry Winks, who is only like 3 foot tall, isn't he?
Well, he ran from so deep, and there was no midfield runner tracking him, you know, no midfield runner to take him out, possibly. The marking was poor. I think maybe they're just lacking leadership on the pitch. I mean, Fulham played quite well yesterday, I thought. but just this moment of naivety right at the very end. And it's a hammer blow. It must have been on the floor in the dressing room afterwards to play well against a very, you know, top six side, admittedly one that's depleted, and to come away with nothing after that late knockout blow, it just must be soul destroying.
It was a very, very high cross, wasn't it, as well? For the goal. It was so high and dips right at the end from Nkudu, who's hardly played for Spurs as well.
That's the first time he's kicked a ball in about 5 years. His tweet afterwards was, "Hello, with four O's, you remember me."
If you remember, he's the guy that spent nearly 2 weeks in a hotel while Tottenham tried to lower the price when they bought him originally. So he's not been treated that well by the club there. And he's got quite a lot of talent, just hasn't been given much of a chance. So,
well, he might. I mean, Pochettino keeps saying this is just a great opportunity as more players get injured or go and play international competitions. I mean, they've got so many fixtures, and they've got the Carabao second leg, they've got the Dortmund game, they've got a tough fixture list in the Premier League, and they are bare bones now. And they've sold Dembele, who, I mean, I don't know how fit he was anyway, but if they manage to keep where they are, it's a great achievement, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think to have finished, if they finished third, even without these injuries, I think that was a good achievement. Then obviously, well, you'd assume they will prioritise Thursday night, you know, 1-0 up in the Carabao Cup semi-final so far, go to Stamford Bridge, where they will sense that Chelsea are the anxious side. Hopefully they'll prioritise that and not the FA Cup fourth round tie at Selhurst Park on
you
Sunday.
Say prioritise,
yeah, because you know what happened last time Palace beat Tottenham in the
FA Cup. We lost the final.
But you, I mean, you say prioritise, but they don't really have enough players to prioritise. You know, they've just got to put out who they've got, don't they?
Well, they have got some youth players who are coming, who are making appearances on the bench now. I mean, I guess that they could come into the starting lineup. But yeah, you're right. They don't have an awful lot of options. Particularly in attacking areas. Hopefully Lucas Moura comes back for Thursday and gives them another body in there. But this is looking a bit threadbare now. But you know, they've got 10 days left of the window, I think.
Barry, yesterday on the wireless, we both pointed out how good a player Fernando Llorente was and that he has played football before. And yesterday, I did look a little bit like he hadn't played football before. I felt so sorry for him.
Yeah, I do feel sorry. The guy can't catch a break at all. He is a good player, or he used to be. He has represented some fine teams and scored a lot of goals, but he clearly has no confidence whatsoever. And that own goal, I mean, the look on Pochettino's face after that was just, you know, right, I think next time, you know, send up the Janssen insignia, which...
He scored a hat-trick 2 weeks ago.
I know, I thought he would... Yeah. Because, you know, I thought he'd be champing at the bit, but he probably was.
He did have two good chances. And, you know, they always say about strikers, you've just got to get in the position. If he keeps getting clear headers, he will score some goals, surely.
Yeah, I would have thought so. I mean, I imagine that it's difficult. It's a difficult job to have to step in for Harry Kane. I mean, psychologically there, that's fairly tricky. And maybe you have to get past that. Maybe it'll take a while for him to do that. But, you know, he's got to start on Thursday and probably have to start on Sunday as well, given the lack of options they have.
If Dele Alli's injured as well,
exactly.
Rumours of him playing a full start.
It is interesting though whether Tottenham will be finally persuaded to buy some players, because, you know, obviously from the summer they didn't buy anyone.
Rumours this morning of Andy Carroll.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it?
My first thought, well, that is ridiculous. But then I thought, actually, I mean, I know his miss yesterday was sort of Llorente-esque, but, you know, is that a really stupid idea?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they could probably do better than that. Someone a bit more suited to their style of play.
Two huge games at the bottom. Newcastle 3, the Cardiff Brexiteers 0. Lovely mazy dribble from Fabian Scher for the first goal, Barry. Although he didn't actually have to go round anyone, just ran in a straight line.
No, the defending was non-existent. Umar Nayas was sort of tracking him but couldn't keep up with him, and yeah, the Cardiff defenders backpedaled and he shot the ball in with his left foot. Mm-hmm. So I think that perhaps took him a bit by surprise, but I would imagine Neil Warnock was furious afterwards about that, although he seemed calm enough. Maybe he's has his eye on Westminster and what's going on there. But yeah, it was a good win for Newcastle, who also have a lot of injuries. Their fans spent the entire game roaring abuse at Mike Ashley, who was there grinning like an idiot and checking his phone repeatedly. And you know, Newcastle need signings as well, but they're probably not going to get them. I wouldn't have been a bit surprised that if Cardiff had beaten them, and to see Newcastle win 3-0 was a bit of a surprise.
If you look at the bottom of the table, if we presume Huddersfield and Fulham are gone, then it is one of Cardiff, Newcastle, Burnley, Southampton and Palace. And I don't know, I sort of intrinsically feel it's actually one of Newcastle or Cardiff, or am I going too soon, given that the other three are just 1 point ahead of Newcastle?
I suppose we have to see what happens in the remainder of January in terms of purchases. Cardiff have just spent £15-20 million on a striker who could make a difference to them. Newcastle, as you say, the next two games are actually Manchester City and Spurs. So, you know, we could probably reassess them at the end of the month as well. Burnley and Southampton are both on good runs. But, you know, you come out of good runs, don't you, I guess. You look at those teams, and we would have assumed that Cardiff would have been down there at the start of the season, I think. But a lot will depend on how the new man does up front, and whether he scores the goals to keep them clear of trouble.
Would anyone like to praise the sportsmanship of Salomon Rondon?
No, not really. Oh. I don't think he's his place to do that. It's up to the ref to stop play. And for a player in a team who's struggling to pass up a promising attacking opportunity to put the ball out of play just because someone's taken a ball in the face, I wouldn't. If I was his manager, I would probably be displeased about it. It's not a hill I'd die on or anything over it, but I think that's a customer that I don't want to see in the game. You know, players often expect the ball to be put out of play if one of their teammates is down injured. And no, it's the ref's job to stop play. And I find it infuriating when you see players berating.
No, but this is slightly different, isn't it? I mean,
he looked as if he'd been knocked unconscious. I mean, the way he fell to the floor, he limp. He looked as if it was a properly serious injury.
Mm. And wasn't Rondon involved in a...
Yeah,
it was Everton player.
McCarthy, yeah. He broke his leg badly, didn't he? And he was in tears on that occasion as well. But
yeah, okay, fair enough.
Stick to your guns, Barry, if you want.
I didn't realise... Who was the player in question that took the ball in the face?
Bennett, was it?
Oh, Bennett. Yeah. If he was knocked unconscious, then did he play on?
Well, the thing, you're right. He then got up. Fine. It was purely the...
Well, maybe he was knocked unconscious, but then we're on to another of my bugbears, which is if someone's knocked unconscious, they've no business playing on.
How high a horse can you be on, Barry?
Am I banging in my drum?
Of course you are. Southampton 2, Everton 1. Lots of people... I mean, Marco Silva just constantly gets... The question is he a fraud, Ed?
Well, it's a really difficult question, actually. I went to Watford game on Saturday, which we won't talk too much about because it wasn't great, but it was the anniversary of him being sacked and Javi Gracia coming in. And obviously at Watford, his reputation took a real nosedive after a good start. And I think Everton is really, really tricky question because they should be doing a lot better than they are, basically. And they're having a lot of bad results, especially against some of the smaller teams. They're really struggling to pick up points.
And in a lesser kind of way, they're not that exciting, are they? Like, of those teams, Wolves are the ones you go, oh, I'd like to watch them. I don't want to watch Everton.
No, and they've had a couple like Gomez has done really well on loan from Barcelona, and Bernard has shown some flashes of brilliance. But I think this the consistency of Everton's performance has just not been there, really, and perhaps that's down to the lack of a striker.
Lovely goal from James Ward-Prowse, a funny own goal from Digne as well. Chris says, while noticing Valerie at Southampton, I thought, along with Alisson at Liverpool and Anita at Leeds, last time I saw, is there anyone else that could join a women at the bingo team? Or has that list been exhausted with these three? Can you think of any footballers called Maureen or Deirdre?
Doris?
Is there a Doris anywhere? And Mangesh says, nobody mentioned Marco Gabbiadini's transfer. Max, do something. Yeah, congratulations to Marco on moving to Sampdoria for a 51-year-old. Very impressive.
Are you going to butt in or shall I, Dom?
I don't want to talk about Marco Gabbiadini. Although he did score a winner at Anfield once for Palace.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Showing your age, Dom.
Was he not a star?
Was it a winner or it might be an equaliser, actually. It was an equaliser. Jeff Thomas scored the winner.
Was he not a star at Palace?
No. He came in to replace Ian Wright and scored That's 7 goals fair, in 25 it? Or something like that and was sold.
He kept his mojo for Sunderland for couldn't stop scoring.
Bournemouth 2, West Ham 0. Andy Carroll's miss was fun, wasn't it? I know we've mentioned it, Barry. That seemed to be the high point of the game for me.
Yeah, it was comical. Kind of felt a bit sorry for him, but I can see what he was trying to do.
Score?
Well, I think he was the key. There have been worse misses, a lot worse misses, but the keeper was sort of at his feet and he had to try and lift it over him, and obviously it went horribly wrong. But there will be worse misses this season, and there probably have been that I just can't remember off the top of my head. But I could see what he was trying to do. The execution was hideous.
We've mentioned it already. Watford 0, Burnley 0. Ed, you were there. Did you have a nice time?
Not really. It was okay. No, it was okay. There was some good goalkeeping displays from Tom Heaton and Ben Foster as well. But yeah, it wasn't great.
Okay.
Was it better or worse than the time you went to do a match report and forgot your trousers?
What?
Yes. Some pod gold coming up here.
Interestingly, Barry. It was probably better than that. It was at Wolves, yeah. I went to Wolves. I train kids in the morning. I do some coaching. And I had an early start at Wolves, so I had to do my coaching, drive up to Wolves for the game. Got to the ground, was about to get changed out of my stuff for coaching. Realised I hadn't brought my jeans with me, so I had to go to the game in my shorts.
That's beautiful. I mean,
in December.
At least there were shorts. I was wondering how it is that you would just arrive in your underpants at football matches and then get changed before the game.
Thankfully, I had my shorts there, so I spared some embarrassment, but not much. Thanks for that, Barry.
You're welcome.
In the Football League and the Championship, Marcelo Bielsa insisted Leeds 2-1 defeat to Stoke had nothing to do with the fact that he didn't send any spies to watch Stoke train. Or did he? Surely that's the point of spies. We don't know. Stoke boss Nathan Jones said he would have happily invited the Argentine to watch the Potters train, but Jones played a diamond at Luton and all those games that Bielsa watched, so he played 3-5-2 for the Stoke game. Leeds are still top, 1 point ahead of Norwich, who beat Birmingham on Friday night. Apparently 11 Championship clubs have said they're very upset with Leeds, and it's ridiculous, isn't it? Do we all think it's ridiculous or not?
It's a bit opportunistic now. Norwich City are the only ones who've come out and confirmed that they are one of the 11. Apparently a lot of the teams competing near the top are on that list.
Funny that.
Surprise.
Is it the teams from 2 to 12 by any chance?
All the teams that can't get promoted haven't complained.
Ipswich are totally fine with it. Yeah. Crack on with your spying, Leeds. They're still top, 1 point ahead of Norwich, who beat Birmingham on Friday night. Third place, Sheffield United slipped to a 1-0 defeat at Swansea. At the bottom, Ipswich lost again. Second bottom, Bolton play fourth place, West Brom tonight. The highlight of League One and the whole weekend's football was at the Valley. Charlton beat Accrington Stanley 1-0 with a stoppage time penalty. Huge celebrations and players and fans running onto the pitch. One player ran up to the players, slipped and went two-footed on Christian Bielik, their centre-back, caught him right in the undercrackers. It's just a tremendous moment. Charlton the fourth, same points as third place Sunderland, who drew with Scunthorpe. In League Two, the top three all won. That's Lincoln, Bury and Mansfield. Three wins in a row for Colin Calderwood's Cambridge. A last-minute winner against Northampton. We're now 5 points from safety. Thanks to Jeff Stelling for giving me a shout-out on Soccer Saturday as well. I don't know why I'm so excited by that, but I really was. Sol Campbell's Macclesfield beat Oldham, but are still in the drop zone. Oldham apparently in talks with Paul Scholes for the vacant manager's job. I'm sure every time the Oldham job comes up, they're in talks with Paul Scholes. But this one seems closer than it ever has been before, given that he's never
ongoing discussions that never end.
Exactly. We'll all be 200.
Come on, Paul.
Yeah, just get on with it. It'd be nice to see it, and it'd be nice to see if Jose commented on Paul Scholes as a manager after everything that Paul Scholes has said about him.
What happens if Salford City go up and Oldham Athletic are still in League Two next season.
It would be a definite conflict of interest, so I would imagine he would have to drop his interest in one of the concerns.
That's a good question. And Notts County lost again. They're now 6 points adrift at the bottom. Fitbar Corner will be back on Thursday. Unless you want to do one, Baz.
No.
Okay. A full fixture list in the Scottish Premiership on Wednesday night. That's what we're doing on Thursday. Before you get angry with us, Celtic start the year by hosting relegation-threatened St Mirren, while Rangers have a tough trip to third place Kilmarnock waiting for them. And that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll begin with Sid in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Spain with Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm excellent, thanks. Top three all won. Were they exciting games?
Well, the most exciting thing, I suppose, from the point of view looking at the Spanish league, was that Real Madrid played well. I sat down with a mate before the game, and it was one of those where you sort of go, well, anything can happen in this, you know, because Madrid are so unpredictable at the moment, and they're not playing. They've not been playing particularly well, but obviously they've got very good players. Sevilla have been a bit predictable as well, and they've started to kind of slow down a little bit, and it was third against fourth and all the rest of it. And we actually sort of agreed that, yeah, anything can happen except Real Madrid playing well. And actually, Real Madrid did play well. I think possibly the best they've played this season, apart from the game against Roma in the Champions League. And those little signs of things starting to move. And you know, there was a speed about them. They were reasonably good on the ball. Luka Modric was brilliant, the best he's played all season, in the season where physically he really hasn't been in good shape at all. So that was quite interesting to see. And obviously, look, they're 10 points behind in La Liga. The likelihood is that they won't compete for the title, although Solari was saying that, you know, they'll push all the way to the end. But what it does suggest, of course, is that coming into February, when the Champions League starts up again, and also with the Copa del Rey this month, that there's a chance they could compete for those.
Casemiro scored a glorious goal, didn't he?
Yeah, brilliant goal. And actually, it came at a really important time, because although this sounds like I'm now going to contradict everything I've just said, they'd had a really, really good 25 minutes at the start of the second half, but they didn't get the goal. And it was just as you started to think, well, if they don't get it, it's just starting to drift away from them a little bit, when he scored it. An absolutely belting shot from kind of 25 yards or so, which went in. Goldie got a bit of a hand to it, which went in right by the crossbar. And then Modric got the second very late on. But Sevilla were very disappointing. And from Sevilla's point of view, this is a team that, you know, a month or so ago we were saying might compete for the league title. They now look like a team that's played 38 games this season, and then I think they're starting to run out of energy.
Win for Barcelona over Leganes. Dan asked a question for you, Sid. One for Sid. Why haven't things worked out for Coutinho as he would have hoped? And what's the likelihood of him being sold this month?
Well, I don't think he'll be sold this month. I don't think there's a real intention to sell him in the summer either. But it is true that there's a little bit of concern about him. I think partly he's in a position where he's got a manager who's been trying to find the best way of getting his best players into the team, but without losing some solidity from the midfield. And one of the ways of doing that, and it was working quite well, was to have Coutinho as part of the front three, rather than have him in midfield with the other three. And so you could solidify the midfield and have him in the front three. But then, as Dembélé started to play really well again, Dembélé was very, very good last night, Dembélé has then taken his place in the front three. So in part, he's a victim of a kind of a systemic problem, you know, that there isn't naturally a place for him unless you put him in the middle three, and that hasn't really worked. It's also true that he looks at times, I mean, it's difficult to judge this, obviously, but he looks at times a little bit timid on the pitch. He looks at times occasionally a little reluctant to try things, occasionally a little bit reluctant to be a bit more aggressive with the ball. Obviously, he does the things that everyone saw him do for years at Liverpool. He's play on the left, come inside, shoot really, really well from mid-distance. But there's been, I think, a slight sense that they want a bit more than that from him. And I actually think he had a very, very good start to his Barcelona career, but this season, it's true, he's tailed off quite a lot.
The race for fourth place is quite exciting. Sevilla losing there, you're saying, because they're on a poor run. I mean, you could almost go down to, I don't know, I mean, arguably 10th if one of those sides went on a good run for the fourth place.
Well, it's more than that. I mean, in a way, I think probably, I mean, you know, obviously we'll Sevilla do continue to tail off quite badly. Probably you would say that the top four now should be the top four at the end. Fifth and sixth at the moment are Alaves and Getafe, which tells you a lot about it. You've got Valencia, who are now relatively close to that. But actually, if you take the table all the way through the table, basically anything from sixth down to about 17th, there's only 5 or 6 points between them. I think you can look at it and say those final two European places, fifth and sixth, there might well be 7, 8, maybe even 9 teams that can compete for those two places. Equally, I think while it looks like Wesker are probably gone, the other two relegation places could be competed for or competed to not have between kind of 10, 12 teams. It's really, really tight right through the middle of the table.
It's been a long time. No one has asked, inquired about it, but I'm intrigued to know how the Hams are aging in your garage, Sid.
You know what? There was another one this Christmas, which I actually didn't go and collect, which I've still got to do.
Depot?
I had a problem the other day in the garage. The boiler. What would you call it? It's like the hot water tank thing. It broke the other day, and so the garage got a little bit flooded. Luckily, you'll be pleased to know the Hams were okay.
How many are in there?
I think there's only two in there now. There's still quite a lot of pig legs. I mean, you know, get two more and I could, you know, kind of start building a new pig.
Just for future reference, Sid, the hot water tank thing is called the hot water tank.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thanks, Sid.
It did have to be replaced, and I had quite a battle over whether or not it was in guarantee.
Oh, interesting. Well, do keep us posted on whether, you know.
I will do.
Forget
it's
the Hams.
It's fascinating stuff.
Now it's all about Sid's new
hot
water tank.
My amazing. Yeah, there's so many things I can tell you about my garage. Quite something.
Cheers, Sid.
Pleasure. Cheerio.
Sid Lowe out in Spain to Italy now. Paolo Bandini's on his way to Dublin. So I will update you. Four draws in Serie A's 8 games so far this game week. A 0-0, a 1-1, a 2-2 and a 3-3. The latter at Fiorentina versus Sampdoria. Marco Gabbiadini getting on the pitch for Sampdoria. Both teams... shaking your head, John. I'm so sad he's left the Premier League. It was my one joke, right? Now he's gone. Both teams had the lead in the final 20 minutes, and Fiorentina played with 10 men for more than 50. Napoli beat Lazio 2-1 to keep the pressure up on Juve at the top. They play bottom place Chievo tonight with a pretty decent chance to restore their 9-point lead. And Jovinho popped up with a fun winner for Parma as they beat Udinese 2-1 to go into the top half of the table. Just 5 points off a Champions League place for them now. We'll go to Germany and cross live to Archie Rintut, who reports from Lukas Podolski's kebab shop.
After 3.5 weeks away, the Bundesliga back out to play. Start with the title race between Dortmund and Bayern. 6 points between them going into the winter break. I went along to both of their tough trips to start the second half of the season. On Friday night, Bayern went to face Julian Nagelsmann's Hoffenheim, who they'd lost to in both of the past two seasons. This time round, no such trouble. A 3-1 win for Bayern, including a very dominant first half. The best I can remember seeing from them this season against good opposition. Two up by half-time, both coming from Leon Goretzka. The second a really well-worked goal on the counter. Hoffenheim switched from a back three, which had been more of a back five, such was the way their usually flying fullbacks were hemmed in, to a back four in the second half. That brought about immediate improvement, a clue perhaps for Liverpool in a few weeks about how to approach that game against Bayern, though they do already use a back four. Still, Hoffenheim fullback Nico Schulz pulled one back on the counter, but a late goal from Robert Lewandowski sealed it for Bayern. So that put the pressure on Dortmund in the Saturday night game, a big one away at fourth-placed RB Leipzig, who hadn't lost a single Bundesliga home game this season. A couple of no-shows to report. The Dortmund ultras weren't there for the third season running, making a stand against Red Bull and what their Leipzig franchise stands for. On the pitch, captain Marco Reus was out injured for Dortmund for the first time this season, but one of their other big performers of the campaign stepped up with the winning goal. Midfielder Axel Witsel thumped home off the underside of the bar to give them a 1-0 win. A big result to do so after Bayern had put the pressure on them, and to do so without Reus, who will be back in training this week. The 6-point gap at the top then remains, and 3 points back from Bayern remain Gladbach in third. They won 1-0 at Leverkusen to spoil ex-Dortmund boss Peter Bosz's first home game in charge. Leipzig still round off the top four, but lurking just a point behind them now are Eintracht Frankfurt. Their front three of Luka Jovic, Sebastian Haller and Ante Rebic all on target in their 3-1 win against Freiburg. And finally, a word for Fortuna Düsseldorf in the thick of a relegation battle before Christmas, easing ever further out of it with their fourth win on the trot, this time beating Augsburg 2-1.
Thank you so much, Archie Rintut, to France and Ligue 1. The leaders got some revenge on Guingamp. Guingamp. Gangon. I think that's
Gangon.
Gangon. My French is quite good. I mean, really, you should do this, Dom, because you're so fluent in French, you can understand. You can be bored by Claude Puel in any language. Anyway, on the 9th of January, PSG were knocked out of the Coupe de Ligue by Guingamp, losing 2-1 at home. Same fixture 10 days later, three changes to the PSG starting 11. They won 9-0. And what is the point? Mbappe, Cavani both got hat-tricks. Neymar scored two. Thomas Meunier got the ninth from the bench. I think he was on the pitch. wasn't that one-sided. Just booted one from the pitch. Ah, it'll do. Lille stay second with a 2-1 win over Amiens. And Lyon leapfrogged Saint-Etienne by beating them, also by 2-1 in Le Derby. Moussa Dembélé scoring the winner in the 95th minute. His fifth league goal since moving from Celtic in the summer. Three questions. Dan asks, do you ever wake up and wonder what obscure Football League players are up to now? What are Neil Dans, Jimmy Kebby and Leo Fortune West up to nowadays? Neil Dans, I believe, released some songs.
Yeah, he was some kind of musician, wasn't he? Dom will probably know.
I don't remember that bit, I'm afraid. I think he was playing at Bury last season, wasn't he? I think.
What, the guitar?
This is from Charlie B, who says, I'm trying to decide which of Jonathan Wilson's books to read first. Any suggestions, or is it best to go chronologically so not to miss a plot twist? But seriously, which one first? How many have you read of Wilson's books, Dom?
I own a few.
Okay, that's all he cares about. Ed?
I've read Inverting the Pyramid.
Okay.
And I lost my friend's copy, which he's not too happy about.
Barry. Is that next to Jonathan?
I thought you were just going to say I lost my friends.
Barry?
That too.
It depends. If you're into that sort of thing, Inverting the Pyramid is good, I'm told. I quite enjoyed the one about goalkeepers. I think it's called... No, I can't remember what it's called. The Outsider, is it? Or is that Albert Camus?
I only read Jack Reacher books, so I don't know.
I think that may be Camus.
Yeah. Anyway, the one about goalkeepers is decent. I haven't finished it, but I plan to, which is more than I plan to do with any other of his books.
And finally, Oncoming Storm says, does ham belong in a ploughman's lunch? I should have asked Sid, really, shouldn't I? I would say yes.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No way.
Cheese pickle.
Well, a cheese pickle and a slice
in
of
a
ham.
Lunch, yeah. In a lunch, you probably have a bit of ham, wouldn't you?
Yeah, why not? On a ploughman's. I mean, I'd never order a ploughman's. Would you ever order a ploughman's?
Oh, I like a ploughman's.
Do you?
No.
It's not enough of anything, you know? It's a bit bitty.
Might as well have a sandwich.
But if you're exactly a ploughman, right. It's, you know, the cow or the ox that's doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't need a big
feed? You don't need a big lunch.
Okay, I'd never thought
or,
about
or indeed the tractor in this day and age.
Still, hey, back in Offaly, they don't have them yet, do they, Barry?
No.
Anyway, always good to insult the Irish just before we go there. Two nights of entertainment. If you are coming to Dublin and you listen to this before you come to the show, that's quite a lot of pod in one day. We'll see you then. If not... we'll be back on Thursday. Barry, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dom.
Pleasure.
See you Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.